Hi, I'm Simon Campbell.
And I'm Susie Starlight of the Starlight Campbell Band.
Welcome to a special edition of the Supertones Show featuring Carl Radle and bass.
Delaney and Bonnie, Coming Home, from their sixth album, D&B Together, and it was originally called Country Life. And
that was released... Country Life?
Really? As you say that, you've got to speak like that, right? And it was released in March 1972 on the Columbia record label.
Written by Bonnie Bramlett, which is nothing to do with some type of apple pie or something, yeah? And the lovely Eric Clapton. And
engineered by Tom Dowd, our friend.
Well, yeah.
Oh, and James Green as well, yeah. But we love Tom.
We do. We did.
We've
a
named
show.
Our yuckcraft. Our cheese platter, actually.
Yeah.
We've got Jeff.
Yeah.
The yucker.
Which is Emmerich. Jeff
Emmerich. Jeff Emmerich, the yucker. We've got Tom Dowd, the cheese plant.
Anyway, less of our plant.
So, can I just say today's show is all about the bass.
Yeah. Well, it is, and we've done a lot of guitar recently.
We have, an electric guitar, and it was like, and it was your idea, actually, because I'm not really, I don't usually push the bass at all in that respect, but Carl
Radle...
You get
very excited about it, though, the bass.
I do, but the thing is that with, it's like, you know, but the bass is usually part of a whole song, so I'm never really thinking, oh, yeah, you know, we've got to do a show on bass, because, you know, it could be a bit boring.
Well, this is about Carl Radle, and the thing about Carl Radle... is that when you first started playing, and we'll talk about that later on, you asked me who you should listen to. And I said, well, I said you should learn the whole of EC Was Here, which is Carl Radle on it, of course.
By Eric Clapton.
Clapton, yeah. And I think Eric's best album, controversially, but I think it is. He's playing. I said you should listen to Jack Bruce, Andy Fraser, and John Paul Jones.
You
I said,
did.
Once you've cracked those badges, you've cracked it. You've cracked the bass. And since then, you've turned into a bass monster. And in fact, today, and I think over the weekend, we're going to be having delivery of your brand new bass amp, which is made by Matamp. And it's a Supertone Matamp, and it was designed specifically for you.
I know.
200 watts of British valve power.
I can't wait.
Anyway, back to Carl. Just talk to me about Carl Radler for a bit, because it's difficult to find out, because he died...
Well, he died quite young, actually. Mm. His career spanned sort of 15 years. And I want to talk about the beautiful things. Right? So he's a musician's musician, and he's one of the most under-recognised and influential blues rock bassists in rock and roll history. I mean, this guy, he's recorded and performed or collaborated with over 24 Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductees, would you believe? But first and foremost, I also say about Radel is that he serves a song.
Mm.
If he needs a simple line, he'll play a simple line, but he'll always have a groove with it.
Yeah.
And I got that. When I read that, I thought, I know what they're on about with him. But he was born in Oklahoma City on the 18th of June in 1942. Mm. And by the time he reached his teens, he was playing bass. But just as the rock and roll boom started, and it's all about timing. Because I was thinking about this. So he was a teenager playing bass. And then he moved to California and he met up with Liam Russell. And then he started playing in a band called Gary Lewis and the Playboys. During that time, he was in a band called Colors. And then Leon Russell introduced him to Delaney and Bonnie. So that's how he got to play with Delaney and Bonnie.
Right, okay.
Now, Delaney is a bloke.
Indeed.
I did not know that. Well, it's not my era, right? Because I've got a friend in California, actually, called Delane. So I thought it was kind of like Delaney. Okay. You know, like I would never call her Delaney, but I just thought it was a. Isn't it funny though?
Well, it is.
Because, and Bonnie, well, anyway, that was just my lack of knowledge, but that's fine. I don't mind that, you know, because it's all about learning.
And is that how Clapton met Carl Radler?
Right. Now, yes, because what happened was Delaney and Bonnie. So Carl Radler got on the tour with Delaney and Bonnie, and they went on tour opening for Blind Faith.
Ah.
So that's what happened.
Right, I get it.
And he also said, let me just have a quote down here. I think it was something that I read about Eric saying that going on after Delaney and Bonnie was actually quite hard for him as a musician because he was so into them.
Wow.
They actually felt that they were better than Blind Faith.
Wow.
Isn't it funny? And it was hard for him because I think they really kicked ass, you know.
Well, that lick on that, which Eric's playing on, of course, on the track we've just heard, it does sound a little bit like the beginning of Jessica by the Allman Brothers.
Oh.
Of course, that, you know, later on, Eric worked with on Layla. And
there's cross-pollination of ideas here. I've just discovered a load of stuff today. I must say, though, with Carl, partly the reason why people don't know him is it's really, really difficult to find information about him.
Mm.
It's like he plays on an album and I was programming the show with you, and then you find that actually, you know, but he might have only been on like two or three tracks of the album, and they don't really tell you which one. It's a very bitty research project, this, just trying to, and I just want to give him a big hug and go, come on, man, let's get this stuff together so we can tell the world about you, you know.
After midnight, we're gonna let it all hang out. After midnight, we're gonna chug, lug, and shine. We're gonna cause talk and suspicion, give an exhibition, find out what it is all about. After midnight, we're gonna let it all hang out. After midnight, gonna shake your tambourine. After midnight, gonna be peaches and cream. We're gonna cause talk and suspicion, give an exhibition, find out what is a holy bell. After midnight, we're gonna let it all hang. Talking suspicion, give an exhibition, find out what it is on labor. After midnight, we're gonna let it all hang out. After midnight, we're gonna let it all hang out.
JJ Cale, After Midnight, from his debut album, Naturally, released in 1972 on A&M Records in the UK and Shelter record label in the USA. Now, JJ Cale, right, and Eric Clapton are almost synonymous, because when you listen to Eric Clapton's late work, he just sounds like JJ Cale. And he's ripped him off so much, it's painful. It's like having a plaster ripped off a hairy arm. It goes, ow, like that. And every time I hear it, I think, Clapton, you plagiaristic little rascal. Anyway, talk to me about JJ Cale, because when you look at this track on Wikipedia, all you get is all about Eric Clapton and nothing about JJ Cale. But JJ Cale, he's a monster, isn't he?
He was actually in this version is a slow down version and of After Midnight, because what happened was that there are loads of different stories of how first Eric Clapton came to hear the original, and After Midnight was a lot faster when it was initially released.
Okay.
And it was a B-side to a single that JJ Cale released called Slow Motion, and that was back in 1966, but it didn't really do anything.
Mm.
And then in 1970, Clapton released a version of it, or identical to that version on the B-side.
Yeah.
Same tempo, I think, and everything. But JJ Cale didn't mind, because he was skint. And he wasn't really working that much. And it was great to actually earn some money, because he got the royalties from the songwriting.
Of course.
So.
And a lot, I would expect.
Well, exactly.
Eric Clapton was right at the height then, wasn't he?
So that kind of changed. I think he was really grateful for that. But when that happened, JJ Cale's friend and producer called Aldous Ashworth, it's a bit of a tongue twister that, he said to him and persuaded him to record an album of his songs. He said, you need to take advantage of the fact that the songs are hit. And so JJ Cale said, well, I'm not going to do that again, because Clapton's already done it in that tempo, so he slowed it down.
Right, okay.
And so to record it, though, he got Carl Radle in on bass, right? But he was so skint that he paid him demo fees to start with, because he didn't have enough money. Even though he had some money from the thing, he still didn't have enough money to go into a full studio. And some of the tracks were actually started off with a drum machine, because you couldn't afford a real drummer.
Well, the funny thing is with royalties, is that it sometimes takes years for them to come through. And, you know, it's and that's one with Queen, I believe, in the fact that Queen got very agitated originally when they first signed, because they didn't get the royalties quickly enough.
Yeah.
You know?
It's like you work, but you have to wait, you know, you usually get paid at the end of the month.
Yeah.
Exactly. And I don't think people realise this, you know. People get a single or a chart hit and they suddenly jump into someone's world and they think, oh, they're famous and they're a really cool musician.
Mm.
But they might not have, unless they've got the backing of a major label or something, they might not have any money for ages.
Indeed.
And it's a very odd thing, really. But what interests me about this as well is this thing called the Tulsa Sound, because you've got Carl Radle and you've got drummer Jamie Oldacre, and they both graduated from Tulsa's Edison High School in the late 50s. And they're talking about Tulsa being in a place where it was a crossroads between East and West. Mm. So you had the accents going from the Deep South to the Midwest, and all the white guys were learning the blues from the Race Records on the radio and from black musicians like Jimmy Markham and Flash Terry on the north side of town.
Right, okay.
So you've got this kind of melting pot of influences as well from that. And it was saying, J.J. Cale, actually, this is something that lovely that Clapton said. He wrote about J.J. Cale as one of the most important artists in the history of rock, basically, and he quietly representing the greatest asset his country has ever had. So Clapton knew and respected Cale and mentioned it. But going back to the Tulsa sound, J.J. Cale said they were just trying to play the blues and they didn't know how, so that's what they came up with. It's like just as the Rolling Stones and the Yardbirds, right, were trying to copy American blues records and got it just wrong enough to come up with something new. So did those kids amid the empty ranch lands and oil wells of Oklahoma. But instead of filtering the blues through skiffle and music hall songs as the Brits did, these cowboys filtered it through country music and gospel, and that made all the difference.
About my baby, I speak of her with pride. She go all the way, make me satisfied, Lord. She's my baby, she's my baby. Don't you see? I can't call her sugar, sugar never was so sweet. I ain't no surprise she served me in the bed. Manicure my nails, scratch down her from my head, Lord. She's my baby, she's my baby, don't you see? I can't call her sugar, sugar never was so sweet.
Freddie King and Sugar Sweet from the album Burglar, released in 1974 on the RSO record label.
RSO, and that was the same record label that released a lot of Clapton stuff.
Stigwood.
Ah, Stiggo. Yeah. I'm reading at the moment the Cream book. I'm only halfway through because it's very dense. I think I mentioned it on the show the other week. And I'm still only halfway through it. But it talks about Robert Stigwood in great detail. And it's a fascinating book. It really is. I think we'll probably talk about it on the next few shows or whatever. But this was, again, produced by the lovely Tom Dowd at Criteria Studios.
The only track on the whole album.
Yeah, the rest was produced by
Mike Vernon.
Again, he pops up regularly.
Do you know what? If you're in a triv quiz, you just need to probably throw Mike's name in. You probably get it right most of the time.
Well,
and win.
I'm not going to wax lyrical anymore about Mike Vernon, but just look him up. He's everywhere in the blues. But Freddie King, of course, one of the three kings, died very young.
Yeah.
And a lot of people said he died young because he had a penchant for Bloody Marys rather than solid food, apparently. And he got stomach ulcers, and that was it. And he had pancreatitis, and he died. 42, I think.
Yeah.
But this was like one of his seminal albums. And Eric Clapton, of course, is involved in this album. And the mighty rhythm section of Carl Radle and
Jamie Oldacre,
who actually Clapton took on the road when he did EC Was Here. And that is probably why it's my favourite album, because this rhythm section is absolute dynamite. And when I mean dynamite, I'm talking TNT.
Where the hell did that come from?
I don't know. I've no idea. Anyway, just talk to me about this. You know, go on.
Well, in what respect? He's just got this groove. I mean, so I don't understand why there was just this one track that Tom Dowd produced, because he was down at Criteria Studios in Miami, down in Florida. Mm. But it's on the album. It was cut because this album was released 2 years before Freddie King died, and it features a slew of guests basically. So it was like a big features album, and it's one of those gems really. It didn't really sort of. It wasn't a massive album in terms of hits like Hideaway or anything like that, but it still was magnificent. And I chose this song because the groove, do you know, I love, if you listen to the way that Carl's playing as well, he's quite a little bit punchy with it as well, and he's not overplaying, and then suddenly you hear this da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
Yeah.
And it's a lovely little flourish, but the groove, for me, this song, just it makes me smile.
Well, the funny thing about Radle is that, you know, I'm a bit of a gearhead and stuff. And I've always looked at him as like, really, probably one of the greatest American bass players. I think he probably is the greatest American bass. I'm a Jaco and all these people, but he's certainly got something. And it didn't seem to matter what basses he played, because I've seen him playing jazz bass, I've seen him playing precision basses. I've seen, when he was on the EC Was Here, I think he was using a Music Man, because I think they were endorsed by Music Man, because Eric Clapton was using Music Man. I've seen him use Marshall amps, I've seen him use Ampegs, I've seen him use, again, Music Man. But he's always got that sound, because, you know, as we all know, 95% of the sound comes from your fingers, doesn't
it? Yeah, it does.
You know, and you can't buy groove. You can't teach people how to groove. And the story, and I know that you hate me telling this, but it was when we first found out that you were a bass player. We had a drum machine going, and we were doing some writing, and we had a bass kicking around. That we'd got for Andy Seward, who had come over. He's a great bass player, and he came over to work with us. He produced the second solo record that I did called The Knife. And Susie wasn't playing bass at the time, but you just picked it up, didn't you?
Yeah.
And you played one note, and I said, baby, you're going to be a bass player. And you said, what do you mean? And I said, well, you are, because it just was right in the pocket. And I know you were playing against a drum machine, but it's just right in the pocket. And you're just on the one, a do. And it was like, two, three, four, do. And it was like, unbelievably groovy, and that was it. And you didn't believe me.
No, I didn't.
And for Christmas presents, I bought you a bass. A birthday present, I bought you another bass. I bought you amps, and it was only after about a couple of months after you got your first bass that you really got stuck into it.
Yeah, because I didn't know what to do with it, and I didn't believe you, and I didn't understand. And it's funny though, because I mean, I'm a folk artist really from where I grew up. I'm a singer songwriter, folk artist.
You are.
That, with a rocky edge, because I really do like to rock out, and I've always liked that. But I didn't play with a drummer for a long, long time. In fact, you're the first band when you got me a band together that I actually played with a drummer, because I used to tour the folk circuit with a band called Megiddo, and we just had two acoustic guitars, a fretless bass, and me singing, and I was occasionally playing a bit of mandolin. So that was my music, and suddenly you're saying you're going to be a bass player, and I was just having a bit of fun on the, you know, because I do love dance. And so you can imagine it's like... well, what does a bass do, you know? When you think about writing a bass line or working out the relationship of what the bass does in a song, it turned my world upside down, seriously.
Well, a lot of people don't really appreciate it. I mean, we are talking about bass in this program, but it creates the movement in the track. It allows the other instruments place to breathe. I mean, in that track, you heard a lot of funky sort of guitar, you know, and it's like that's like almost replacing the hi hat, dig 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 dig, and then the bass is good. And it's like giving the whole movement to the track. And if you listen to, you know, many great songs that everybody knows, it's normally the bass that is actually, you know.
So, just so you know, just because it's got four strings doesn't make it any easier.
Thank you.
Eric Clapton, Rambling On My Mind from the live album, and my favourite Eric Clapton album, and one of my favourite albums of all time, EC Was Here, released in August 1975 on the RSO record label, the really first time I'd ever heard Eric Clapton. I never want that track to end. His guitar playing is off the scale on that track. And I love the progressions, you know, because he's calling out the keys. Obviously, I think the band do know what they're going to be doing next, but it sort of adds a good effect.
Mm-hmm.
But the build-up that's happening, and George Terry on guitar is so subtle, you know, and actually, at the beginning, George Terry's pushing the groove too much. He's actually slightly ahead, and Oldacre and Radler trying to keep it back sounds a bit like Simon Campbell.
Yeah? I was about to say, that sounds
and Oldacre and Radler are keeping it back, and there's Dick Sims on the organ, and it's a perfect blues record. Perfect. Mm. Produced, again, by Tom Dowd. And
yay.
Written by Robert Johnson, of course. Well, yes. Not of course, but that's who wrote it originally.
Yes, yeah.
And, you know, and just talking about the bass, he's the build-up, how he starts, it's so simple.
Yeah.
It's just, there's hardly anything going on at all.
It's cool, isn't it?
And then he starts kicking into those walking basses. But it's not just a normal walk. His choice of notes is incredible, considering he's only playing around three chords, you know, the one, the four, and the five, you know. So if you're playing an E, it's E, A, and B, you know. So and he's moving up, doing those three chords, but just in different keys. And it's just fantastic. And then when it drops down, you know, oh, and his guitar sound. I'm sorry for going on, but you know, he's using the Music Man amps with his the Strat, and it's just the best Eric Clapton guitar sound. And it's almost, it's like crying, because, and he just come out of his heroin and alcohol trip, hadn't he? And, mm-hmm. and Carl Radley had a lot to do with
Yeah, because when, after Derek and the Dominoes broke up, Carl Radley stayed in touch with him, and I think that was really cool, and he used to send him mixtapes.
No.
Oh, yeah. And what happened was that Carl sent him one particular mixtape, and Eric Clapton listened to it, and he plays along with it. And apparently he sent him a telegram to Carl saying, maintain loose posture, stay in touch. And at that point he said he started, you know, soon after that he got straight. So Carl Radle was really quite important in Eric Clapton's life in terms of bringing him back out onto the road and keeping him in the loop, because when he went off and went into his addictions and everything, Carl always kept in contact with him.
And he said he was like a brother to him, really.
He did. That's exactly what he said, yeah. And basically he took him out of seclusion. And, you know, you don't always get that. And that's the thing that I love about Carl Radle too, is that he was friends. He was a good man who really cared about the people he played with. He wasn't playing sessions and just in bands and not having any friendships with people, you know. He was a solid part of people's lives. So, you know, absolutely brilliant.
I
any word. I can speak thanks to you, darling, my dear. I can swear that you never heard. I rap strong and I know I rap long. Come on, mama, let me turn you on. Now, come on. All right. When I rap my game and call your name, you will never be the same. And the midnight hours when you dream, my darling, I swear you will call my name. I rap strong and I know I rap long. Come on, mama, let me turn you on. Come on. I was hauled off the jail late last night with no one to go my bail. I rap strong to the judge early this morning, and the judge put the cops in jail. I rap strong and I know I rap long. Come on, mama, let me turn you on. Now, come on. Let me tell you about me, baby. I got to tell you. I'm going to preach about it. I want the world to know about it. I want to know what you did to me. Let me tell you.
Buddy Guy and Junior Wells, a man of many words from the album Buddy Guy and Junior Wells Plays the Blues, and that was released on the 4th of August in 1972 on Atlantic Records.
David Frick, Frick from Rolling Stones magazine, called them the original Blues Brothers.
You can feel it, can't you?
Well, you can. The only thing is that I think Buddy Guy's playing out there is shockingly bad. I think it's just a mess of trying to play too fast. And I've never been a great Buddy Guy fan.
Oh, okay.
But don't tell anybody.
Okay.
Compared with the last magnificence of Eric, and I know, Eric's a white blues man, but...
He's playing on that track as well, Bottleneck, apparently.
Oh, right, I didn't know
that. I just looked at the liner notes now. It's really difficult to find the information. I was just doing some extra bit of research when the track was going down.
And this is also produced by the mighty Tom Dowd, who's everywhere over
and
Eric Clapton's.
And Armored Gun. Wow. And Eric.
Yeah, well...
So it's like the Atlantic team.
Well, Armored was, of course, he ran... and was the major force, well, the force behind Atlantic Records.
Yeah.
Along with Jerry Wexler, our favourite, you know, bloke.
It's a hit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, put it out. It's a hit. It's a remarkable story, the whole Atlantic, because, you know, they took race music, didn't they? And Jerry Wexler changed it from race music into something that was blues, you know, mm-hmm. and something where these black artists were being recognised, and they were a forefront leader in actually pushing black artists in America. And it was only later on, and then they signed Led Zeppelin, they signed, you know, they signed Kick so ass. Many people. Yeah, good, great. Anyway, back to Buddy Guy and Junior Wells. Wells was singing on that, of course.
And Carl Radle was on bass.
Ah, no, yes.
Yeah.
Who?
Exactly. And Jim Gordon on drums. Now, Jim and obviously Carl are played together a lot, and Jim also played with the Everly Brothers and Pet Sounds of the Beach Boys. And on piano, Dr. John.
No.
Oh, yes.
The late, great Dr. John.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Really, really cool. So you had a real lineup, but again, it's one of these albums where Carl's just playing on one track. And so you have to really go and dig deep, you know, with your bucket and spade, trying to get into the actual roots of the albums to find out what tracks they're on. But I love the fact that they're bringing them in for these random songs. I mean, they might not have been random, but for me, it's just like, okay, he plays on track one here, on the next album be on track 6 and 8. But that's where you've got to sort of just be careful as well. When you know he's played on an album, what actual track is? But you can hear it, it's Carl Radle.
Yeah.
And what I didn't realize as well about Buddy Guy, he was born in Louisiana, and he was a sideman at Chess Studios in Chicago, and he'd sort of like already been playing on singles for Muddy Waters and Howling Wolf, and then he played a Tuesday session in 1965 for singer and harp player Junior Wells,
right?
And that was up for his debut album called Hoodoo Man Blues. We know that one, and he'd already released Messing with the Kid and Little by Little. And anyway, these guys became lifelong friends. I think that's probably where Frick got his reference from, with the original Blues Brothers. And so they recorded and toured for years together and even opened for the Rolling Stones. So wow. It's well cool. Just cool.
Well, also, Jim Gordon was actually in a relationship for a long time with the ex-artist. Did you know that?
I did.
Never know how much I love you. You'll never know how much I care. When you put your arms around me, I get a fever that's so hard to bear. You give me fever. When you kiss me, fever. When you hold me tight, fever. In the morning, fever all through the night. Now listen to me, baby, and hear every word I say. You know that no one can love you the way that I do, because they don't know how to love you my way. You give me fever. When you kiss me, when you hold me tight, fever in the morning, fever all through the night. Bless my soul, I love you. Now take this heart away, and take these arms that I never, never use. Believe in what my lips have to say. You give me fever. When you kiss me, fever. When you hold me tight, fever. In the
the morning and fever all through the night. Sunlights of the daytime, the moonlights of the night. You know I light up when you call my name, because I know you're gonna treat me right. You give me fever when you kiss me, fever when you hold me tight. Fever in the morning and fever all through.
You're listening to The Supertone Show with Simon Campbell and Susie Starlight of the Starlight Campbell Band.
And it's a special show on Carl Radle and his...
bass.
Yes, and the people who he records he's played on and graced with his presence. And this was Rita Coolidge. I love that name. Coolidge.
Yeah.
The Delta Lady, a.k.a. And that's Fever from her third album, The Lady's Not For Sale, released on October 1972 on A&M Records. Written, of course, by Johnny Devonport and Eddie Cooley.
A classic.
A total classic.
I've got to confess, though, we were going to play Bird on the Wire, and then we realised that Carl hadn't actually played on it. It's very difficult. I was, but this, I mean, the space on the bass.
Oh, yeah. And there's the little skips in there. If you listen to it in detail, there's a lot of skips and stuff. And there's some classic Fever falling down the stairs drums on it.
Yeah,
well,
I heard that too. I was like, whoa. What's going on there?
And then all of a sudden it's, but Carl's keeping it, you know, and real, you know, beautiful bass guitar on that. Really great, you know.
And this is where the plot thickens, because Rita was discovered by Delaney and Bonnie, which I didn't know about. So they were working with her in LA, so she ended up getting a load of work as a backing singer for like Leon Russell and Joe Cocker, Harry Chapin, Bob Dylan, Jimi Hendrix, Eric Clapton, Dave Mason, and Graham Nash and Stephen Stills. I think she dated both guys, actually.
Right, wow.
I think that's, I did read, and I don't like to talk about that sort of thing anyway, because it's like, you know, people are people, that's what they do. But she was also featured in Joe Cocker's Mad Dogs and Englishmen tour, and she sang the song Superstar, which is written by Russell and Donnie Bramlett, and she became known as the Delta Lady. And what was beautiful is that she's... she met Kris Kristofferson in an airport in LA, and he was going to get off, I think, in Nashville, but he got off in Memphis with her, and they married and got together, and they married 3 years later.
Is that right?
Yeah, I didn't know she was married to Kris Kristofferson, and they actually won a couple of Grammys together as well for best vocal albums.
I always find Kris Kristofferson very difficult to say, because you don't want to say it drunk, do you?
It's like brewery.
Yes, like brewery, yes, indeed. Why didn't he? Yeah, that's amazing. So, I mean, but you know, we always talk on this program about scenes, and it's clear that Rita Coolidge and Tom Dowd and all these guys and ladies were in a scene, you know, and they're all hanging out, and Carl Radle and Jim Gordon and Old Acre and all these people, and it's a bit of a melting pot in that particular thing. And you get it in London, you get a London scene, you get an LA scene, a New York scene, but this is very much, you know, a scene centered, really. And it seems to be around Tom Dowd. He seems to always be hanging around there, doesn't he? You know,
that's quite an interesting thought, actually. And Elton John once told Rita that Delaney and Bonnie were so important, and if it wasn't for you guys, he said, you know, and Delaney and Bonnie, that and that sort of group of people, that scene, he said he wouldn't be there. He wouldn't have done what he did.
Wow, that's incredible. Oh, Reg.
Do it.
Joe Cocker and Honky Tonk Woman from the album Mad Dogs and Englishmen, live at the Fillmore East 1970. That was released in August of that year on A&M Records.
Yes.
It's a Rolling Stones track, obviously, yeah, written by Jagger and Richards.
Joe Cocker, though.
I know. Kick ass.
Yeah, because did he do this tour on the back of his success at Woodstock?
It was, yeah, because I mean, that was, for me, it's the ultimate performance. I mean, he just went skyrocketing. He just toured and toured and gigged and gigged.
Well, that performance at, Cocker at Woodstock is amazing. It's one of our go-to performances, isn't it? We've got a picture on the wall of
Joe. As soon as you walk into our studio, wherever we set up our studio in the world, the first thing you see is a photo of Joe Cocker at Woodstock and a photo next to him of Willy Wonka.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So on that, then, I mean, it's a bit of an all-star band on that, isn't it, you know?
Yeah, yeah. What happened was that he was going to apparently, he wanted a bit of time off after all this mad touring off the success of Woodstock. And his management went and booked in another kind of 52 dates. And he went, crikey. No. So he had to do a US tour. So he got Leon Russell in to come in as music director. And basically, Leon just got everyone.
Oh, Chris Staton's on there, Carl Radle, Jim Gordon, Jim Keltner, who's, another guy who's always associated with...
Chuck Blackwell as well.
Clapton and stuff, yeah.
It's crazy. Brilliant. So, I mean, so that's really what that happened. And I know Rita Coolidge went on tour because she was saying that, you know, Joe just needed her to hang out and as well. And sort of, they were really good friends, so she was there as a really good support for him. So how cool is that, though? I mean, it sounds mad.
Well, I think we're coming towards the end of the show, aren't we?
Here we are.
The Carl Radle extravaganza, a bass, marvellous bass thing.
He is an inspiration. He's really inspired me in terms of teaching me and showing me, actually, what a bass can do and just the dance that you can and the counter melodies. And I don't even like to talk about it. You can just feel him. You know when Carl Radle's playing a track.
Well, you can. On this next track, which is from Slow Hand, again by Clapton, Lay Down Sally, it's marvellous bass line, isn't it?
Yeah, Carl Radle, he rocks.
Nothing that is wrong in wanting you to stay here with me. I know you've got somewhere to go, but won't you make yourself at home and stay with me? And don't you ever leave. Lay down, Sally, and rest here in my arms. Don't you think you want someone to talk to? So soon, I've been trying all night long just to talk to you. Sun ain't nearly on the rise, we still got the moon and stars above. Underneath the velvet skies, love is all that matters. Won't you stay with me? Don't you ever leave. Lay down, Sally, and rest here in my arms. Don't you think you want someone to talk to? Lay down, Sally, and no need to leave so soon. I've been trying all night long just to talk to you. Thank you.
train all night long just to talk to you. Lay down silent and rest here in my arms. Don't you think you want someone to talk to? Lay down silent, there's no need to leave so soon. I've been trying.